This is John Revett with Walt Campbell at the State AFL on Wednesday, March 27th, 1985. This morning, Walt, I thought we would just try to briefly maybe give me some names of other people you think I should talk to. Maybe just start talking about some of your years when you were on the executive board of the State AFL and then when you were elected to the number two position here for the State AFL-CIO.
Yeah, to get the history, John, of the labor movement, I think probably one name you should talk to is Tom Downs, who worked in his early life. He's an attorney here in Lansing now, but in his early part in the labor movement, he worked for Gus Scholl for many years in the old Michigan CIO before the merger in 1958, and he has considerable knowledge of background in those early days of the labor movement. Another one I think that's important when you're building a history would be G-Men and Williams, which we've mentioned once before. Back in 1958, the merger of the National AFL and the CIO took place in 1955. Michigan did not have a merger at that time, and we didn't have a merger until 1958 when the National AFL-CIO, the National AFL-CIO at that time, yes, then put some pressures on to force a merger in the state of Michigan.
Mainly because of the Teamsters?
There was a Teamster influence. There was a Teamster influence in the old AFL, there's no question about it.
What about the Allied Industrial Workers?
Allied Industrial Workers was in favor of merger.
It was.
And took part in the merger. The Transportation Union, for example, the Transit, Amalgamated Transit, Bus Drivers Union, they were in favor, just to name two of them. So we had the merger in 1958 and formed the first AFL-CIO unit. And the president, of course, at that time was Gus Scholl. The executive vice president, which we put in to furnish a spot for the old AFL, was George Murphy, who came out of the Allied Industrial Workers. George was, and I had come out of the very same plant. In fact, he followed me as president of the union, of Local 404 from Muskegon. And then
how come it wasn't you?
I turned it down. I was asked it to come down to I or George, and we suggested George take it. I, just from a standpoint of where I was in the hierarchy of the AIW at that time, I was acting as assistant to the director and was next in line to move into that position.
And this was the post of Secretary Treasurer?
No, that was the post of Executive Vice President,
Executive
which we had at
Executive
Vice
time. President.
Then, and Barney Hopkins, Barney Hopkins was the Secretary Treasurer.
Right.
Barney and Gus coming from the old CIO. And of course, the CIO was much larger than the AFL at that time, simply because of the auto workers. And of course, still is. So the director of my region, Ed Donahue, at that time served on the board of the merged organizations. And we went along in good shape until, and then in 1967, I was elected director. Ed Donahue retired. And I was elected director of Region 7 of the Allied Industrial Workers, AFL-CIO. And on the election, then I assumed the position on the board.
You hadn't been on the board
until 67.
I hadn't
been onto the board. I was working. I worked closely with Gus and Murph and but I hadn't been an official member of the board at that time.
How many were on the board back then? Like 30s? 50s?
I don't recall. It was a smaller number than we have today here.
Okay.
It was a smaller number, and it seems to me I keep thinking of somewhere around. It eventually got up to around 50. I know that, but it was that time it was much smaller, I think. And then, of course, the UAW.
We've been through keys before.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Then, of course, the UAW withdrew from the AFL-CIO. That was in, maybe you can remember, 68?
8 or 9.
Yeah, 68 or 69, somewhere around there. And which created a problem for the state organization, simply because, for no other reason, a money problem. Because it was, we dropped, as I recall, from about $55,000 a month down to about $17,000.
From 55,000 to 17,000 a month? It's quite a drop.
It was a real drop, and between 17 and 20, somewhere in that neighborhood.
Yeah.
And so they established the Shoal at that time. Oh, in the meantime, George Murphy had got killed in an auto accident in 1959, shortly after he took office. And Bill Marshall was elected as the vice president at that time, taking George's place. Bill, of course, was the executive vice president when the withdrawal came of the UAW. The board then established a finance committee to try and see what we could do of cutting back and so forth. The finance committee was comprised of pretty much leaders of the various international unions, and I chaired that committee. And at that time, we made several decisions, which we took to the convention. One was, that we'd move all the offices into the Lansing area. We had an office in Detroit and an office in Lansing, and we sold the office in Detroit.
Which building were you in?
We had a building over on. Washington, an old house, a house over in Washington at the time. And we had an office in Detroit near the, I can't think of the name of the street even now. It was near the Fisher Building down there, in one of the blocks in back.
On Woodward or?
No.
By the old AFT on 2nd or 3rd?
Well, it's the Amalgamated Transit Union purchased the building.
Okay.
And I can't think. And so one of the programs was move it all into here.
Mm-hmm.
We was forced, of course, to lay off some of the staff that was working at the time. Some of them got jobs with the UAW and had come originally from the UAW and went to work for the UAW. Our staff went down pretty much minimal. We suggested raising the dues, which at that time was, as I recall, 7 cents a month, and it was raised to 10. And then there was and Barney Hopkins at that time, having reached the retirement age, decided to retire. So we eliminated the office of the executive vice president. And
the executive vice president?
Yes.
Barney had switched from secretary-treasurer?
No, Barney retired.
Okay.
Barney Hopkins retired.
So we eliminated
the executive vice president. Bill Marshall then became the secretary-treasurer, and Gus Shoal remained as president. Then in...
It wasn't a forced retirement?
No. And then the... Gus decided in...
Were those the three big issues you took to the convention then?
Yes.
And they passed?
And they all passed, yes. And there was some arguments. For example, it meant that people that was working in Detroit had an opportunity to come to Lansing, and and most of them didn't want to, but even most of those got placed in other unions, and or the UAW hired quite a few of them. Then we decided to, right after that happened, when we finally got around to moving the offices and closing the one in Detroit, we then purchased a building down on the end of Washington where Aspie now is, and moved the headquarters into there then, closing up the building on Washington.
Is that other building still around?
The
old house?
The house, no, that probably is tore down in the advancement of Washington Avenue.
Okay.
And then in Gus Scholl then and the other thing we decided to do was put on a real program of getting new affiliations and things of this nature. There was some success to that. And then we increased the In the intervening years there, we increased the per capita then from 10 to 15 cents an hour a month. And we, in 1970, Gus made his decision that he was going to retire. And trying to get years here.
Don't worry about it.
And in the 1971, Gus effectuated his retirement. Bill ran for the presidency. I ran for secretary of treasurer, and we were elected as a team up at Grand Rapids Convention. Then we decided at that point to put on a real extensive drive. So we held regional meetings of both affiliated and non-affiliated unions, and we were successful in building the membership back up at that point to better than 300,000 members.
But without the UAW?
Without the UAW.
And it had been how low, do you think?
Oh, it had been down to probably 200,000 or less than 200,000. We filled it up above 300,000. And per capita was increased twice during the years to 17 cents and then to 22 cents. And but it became a viable organization again. I was able to hire staff. And at the same time, we decided to build, through the executive board, we decided to build this building, or remodel an old building that was here, and we sold the headquarters down on North Washington to AFSCME, and we located here after a remodeling job. The building was all paid for.
It is now.
This building was all paid for at the time that
At the time it was, at that dedication.
At the time of dedication, it was all paid for.
I think that's one. No, it wouldn't have been the first time I met you, but I know I was here at the dedication day. 77.
See, I retired in October of 76.
Right.
And so they dedicated the building in 77. But I wasn't Secretary of Treasury when they dedicated.
Right.
We moved in here in August of 1976. And then, of course, the UAW come back in, and through an agreement between the state FLCIO and a merger agreement with the UAW, and they have to come back in the national FLCIO again, why then it was worked out, and we're up to today of the per capita tax still at 22 cents.
And how many members is it today?
Today it's over 600,000, with the UAW bringing in over 300,000.
So what you and Bill did in getting it up to 300 is about where it stayed since?
It stayed right in the 300 to 340 up until the time of the merger again.
Mm-hmm. You were followed by?
George Watts.
Right.
Of the Steelworkers, the assistant director of the Steelworkers.
And then George was followed by Walt Oliver.
Mm-hmm. Bill was at the time of the merger with the CIO again, why Sam Fishman became the executive vice president. And the agreement was that when Bill retired, the executive vice president position would be eliminated. Mm-hmm. Sam then assumed the presidency when Bill retired. And Marshall became president emeritus.
And there had never been a president emeritus
up till that point, there had never been a president emeritus, that's right.
What does that mean that Bill Marshall is doing with the state AFL these days?
Bill attends executive council meetings, attends board meetings.
With a vote and voice?
Yes, I believe he has both a vote and voice. I'm not sure, but it appears to me that he does. I know
nobody's
he's got a voice. Yeah, I know he's got a voice. But you'd probably have to check the vote out. I believe, I don't know if the Constitution makes that clear or not.
Okay.
And Bill has remained fairly active in other activities, both of the union and then, of course, he's Transportation Commission and several other things.
We could go back on some of those things in detail, or we could cut it short now. What's your timing? Are you?
I can go another 15, 20 minutes.
Okay.
Yeah, no problem with. I'm wondering if this thing is picking everything up.
It jiggles when you talk. It seems to jiggle more when I talk, and I just don't know if that's my voice is stronger. Or
I think probably your voice is, because I have a tendency to talk fairly
there.
Low. So.
No, it just
picks. Yeah. I have a tendency to talk low, so.
Well, in some ways I'd like to save going back and I know I'd shown you some parts of working Detroit. I was just trying to jiggle your memory about some of the kinds of decisions and issues that the state AFL Executive Board faced during the years that you were involved on the board and
yeah.
And then as secretary treasurer. And if we only have 15, 20 minutes, I guess I'd rather save some of that
okay.
for our next time.
Okay.
Is there something else that?
No, to get actions of the executive board, Bill Marshall would be a good person for
mm-hmm.
you to talk to because of. He went on the board in 1959,
mm-hmm.
so he was on from 1959. In fact, he was probably the longest tenured officer from 59 to 84.
I interviewed Bill shortly before his retirement, but about his Detroit years.
Yeah.
I don't know if you had a chance to notice that in the book.
I haven't.
Yet.
No.
It's very brief, and most people aren't going to realize that.
Yeah, he. You see, he was.
But we
in,
didn't talk about more
yeah,
he, recent
he,
things.
He was in the council in Detroit when Frank Martel was president. Mm-hmm. Bill was in that yet.
So
as
I'd,
head of the bus drivers union.
And that's what we were picking up on, and that's what we used. But I need to get back to.
Yeah,
because
he'll have some information from the 59 through to. No, through the 84 as far as he's concerned.
And he may now be in a position where it'd be easy for him to talk. I didn't want to.
He's in Florida right now, but he'll be back at the end of, during the month of April, he's coming back again.
Yeah, I've been wanting to catch up with him to give him a complimentary copy. We tried to do that with the interviewees, and he was one of the 85.
My biggest, after we got into the union, my biggest thing I got into was besides helping rebuild state AFL-CIO. Of course, I got very active.
The issues you were involved with was the rebuilding.
The rebuilding and then the community services.
Mm-hmm.
The reorganization, pretty much, of working with the community services. Got very active at that time, early in the game in community services. And of course, the labor movement itself changed completely in about, politically and otherwise, in about with the election of G. Menon Williams, 1948. And that's why I think it's important that G. Menon be brought into the picture.
Mm-hmm.
That's when we started getting much more active politically than
right.
we were before, although, and much more active legislatively. The old officers, for example, of the old Michigan Federation of Labor,
mm-hmm.
They were primarily Republicans. George
mm-hmm.
Dean, Jack Thorpe.
Mm-hmm.
They were primarily Republicans, and much of the labor movement were not officially, but labor union members were identified as Republicans. So then, those of us that come into our own back in 1931 become of a majority
mm-hmm.
age. And, 1931-32, of course, we
right.
became Democrats with the election of Franklin Delano
right.
Roosevelt. And
but it didn't have that impact.
But it didn't have the impact on the organization of
right.
the state AFL
mm-hmm.
at that time.
Because Murphy's election was really an unusual event
yes.
within basically a Republican time frame.
And of course, the election of Franklin Delano Roosevelt had some effect of helping, like the election of Murphy, the election of Comstock.
Right.
Governor Comstock in 1932 was primarily the result of the FDR election.
Mm-hmm.
But in 1948, I think we, of course, it had the big buzz come over the what was known in those days as the General Motors Amendments to the Michigan Employment Security Act, which occurred in 46, 47, right through there during Kim Sigler's governorship. And I can remember Gus Scholl making a famous statement that time that he'd never support another Republican. And,
who said that?
Gus Scholl.
Mm-hmm.
As a result of that. And so in 1948 is when we really went out and come to the, I think, the changing of the labor movements. Philosophy as far as politics were concerned.
Fine with me to call it now for a while.
Okay.
That was
see you next Tuesday.
That sounds like a good idea to me.